Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey, everybody. It's Jenny here in the intro. Hello.
Oh, hi. It's also Kristen. I'm here with you, Jenny, in the intro. I don't know if you knew that, but I'm here.
Maybe I didn't know that, but I know it now.
Well, I'm so happy to share this space with you. Up in the introduction for what is the first part of our two-part season finale. I know. We have so much incredible content for this finale that we had to break it into two pieces. So in this episode, you're going to hear us talking about the first two dreams of Restless, and you're going to get some very fun segments from Elise Knorr about Sappho. So buckle up. And you're also going to get a snippet from our interview with David Wells, who plays the Cheese Man. But before we get there, let's talk about a little bit of news.
Yes, please.
All right, I'm going to start us off by letting you all know that when I'm not working on Buffering the Vampire Slayer, I am often found working with LGBTQ communities. I run a website, an organization really, called My Kid is Gay, that supports young people, but specifically supports the parents and family members of young people who identify as LGBTQIA. So I am telling you about it in detail up in this intro because this summer I am hiring 3 interns to work with me on that project in a variety of capacities. I'm not going to tell you everything about those roles here, but you can find everything on my website. It's at kristinnolene.com/internships. That's Kristin Nolene, KristinNolene.com/internships. There's a few positions. Some of them can be combined depending on your interests. One in particular I want to highlight, we're building an e-care package for parents and loved ones of trans youth specifically, who've just come out to their families, etc. And I'm looking for somebody to help me curate the content for that. That role will be filled by somebody who identifies as trans, and it is the only role that comes with a stipend. It comes with a $500 stipend. So I'm really excited about that. I'm really excited to find whoever you are out there who's going to help me build that e-care package. And you can find all that information again, kristinnolene.com/internships. Applications are due by May 5th, and those internships all start around May 20th, so there's a little flexibility there as well. So get on over there and work with me this summer.
Kristen, that rules.
Hey, thanks.
Also, speaking of the passage of time, as you mentioned, seasons and stuff, I'd like to take this opportunity to notify everyone about a schedule change. The Angel on Top finale will run next week alongside our Restless Part 2 finale. And that Angel on Top episode will feature one Kristen Russo. I didn't know if you know this. In not one, but 2 segments, both the Fuck Watch and the Cordelia Watch. You're welcome.
That's right.
Look out for that in your feeds next week. And I'll tell you what else, Kristen. You know better than anybody that we have a merch store and it's full of beautiful products. Some of those products are new, including but not limited to a fabulous new beer stein with Isabella Rotman's Support Your Local Alewife artwork on it. It is majestic to look upon. We've got a new Buffering logo mug. We've got a beautiful God's Eye View pin of Willow and Tara doing their magical circle spell. And all of our patrons, just in case you weren't aware of this, all of our patrons at the $10 and up level get a 20% discount on all of our merch all of the time. So if that is relevant to you, now you know.
You should definitely get on over there to our website, bufferingthevampireslayer.com, and click on shop, and you can find all those things, or click on Patreon before you click on shop so you can get your discount. There's a lot of really cool shit, as Jenny mentioned. I also want to just be clear with you that in LA, it is 7 in the morning, and it just took Jenny about 14 hours to record the new merch announcements. And
so I hope it was worth it for you.
I am going to send to all of our $5 patrons the recording of Jenny losing her entire mind giggling for like hours and hours about all of her jokes, which is really worth your money because it's pretty hysterical.
How dare you, sir?
In other news, so because this is a two-part finale, the finale song for season four will be at the end of next week's episode. However, if you have been a listener for a while, you'll remember that earlier in this season, there was an episode called Pangs. And in Pangs, we talked about some of the problematic stuff that happened in that episode with respect to Native people and their treatment in the episode. We had an incredible interview with Koya White Hat Artichoker about the episode, and it was just wonderful. It's still one of my favorite episodes of ours of all time. And at the end of that episode, we put a segment from a speech given at Standing Rock. But for the album, when the album released, we wanted to release something special and something that we could put on the album. And so Koya, who we interviewed, is a poet and wrote a poem specific to the episode and recorded that poem in her own voice. We have that at the end of today's episode. We are so excited about it. It is so beautiful and powerful. And if you purchase the album at the end of the season when we release it, it will be the song for Pangs. So when you get to the end of the episode, that's what's going to be happening. Also, if you are so inclined to donate, the organization of Koya's choice is called Sister Song, and they can be found at sistersong.net. So when you get to the end of this episode, listen to that poem and then go on over to sistersong.net and contribute. You know that that is really the core mission here at Buffering the Vampire Slayer, is to lift up marginalized communities. Yeah, we're just really psyched about it.
Yeah, I have to say that, like, editing the audio last night, I just kept getting, like, very emotional right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Brace yourselves for that.
Jenny, something else you might need to brace yourself for is...
Spooky news.
All right, are you ready, Jenny?
I'm ready. I love this new format of spooky news where I don't know what's going to happen and you tell me.
Well, this spooky news usually, and I love when you submit spooky news to me, so please keep sending it to bufferingthevampireslayer@gmail.com. But this spooky news I actually sent to myself. It was a New York Times alert, which let me know that in a recent study, researchers have restored some cellular activity to the brains of pigs that were dead. Okay? So, I read the headline and was like, spooky news, like the jingle just like played immediately in my brain. So basically, there were no signs that showed that there was electrical signaling happening when they restored activity, cellular activity to these brains. So there wasn't like awareness, things that you would see for awareness and intelligence, but blood vessels in the pig's brains began functioning, flowing with a blood substitute, and certain brain cells regained metabolic activity, even responding to drugs. When the researchers tested slices of the treated brain tissue, they discovered electrical activity in some of the neurons. So I'm not going to obviously read you this whole article, but you should check it out. It's like super creepy to me. I mean, if you're a scientist, it's probably super amazing. But listen, we just got through a whole season with Adam and his uranium core. And I just feel like this is some of the work that Professor Walsh was doing in her laboratory. Like, this is where it began.
Scientists are never like, should we do this? They're just like, can we do this?
Exactly. And actually, it's funny that you say that, Jenny. The other two things that I wanted to talk about in this news story is that, A, the scientists said that it poses metaphysical riddles. So seems related. And the other thing, okay, because you're saying like scientists don't ask, should we? They just say, can we? The investigators, like when they started this project, they didn't want to take the chance that the brains might regain consciousness, as unlikely as that seemed. So they had a plan where if the team saw electrical activity suggesting actual consciousness, they planned to give the brains anesthetic drugs and cool them immediately to stop the process. So like,
what the hell?
Just think about
I guess that's good.
It but is. Like, but like, it's bananas that like somewhere in a lab, scientists were like sitting around with a bunch of dead pig brains being like, okay, so if these brains come alive, what's our plan? Like, what's the fucking plan? So that has been your spooky news.
Spooky news.
Wow, I don't care for that at all.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty rough.
I feel like that raises more questions than it answers.
Agree.
Well, With that in our rearview mirror, we want to thank, as always, Lauren Klein, our dutiful sound engineer, who you can follow on Instagram at Lauren Taylor Klein.
Yes, and before we get into it, we want to let you know there's a lot of reasons you should tune in next week, namely to hear the rest of our episode here, the rest of our discussion of Restless. But also, we're going to have two pretty fucking big announcements at the start of next week's episode. I'm pinching myself so that I can keep it inside of myself for another week. We're pretty excited to tell you what we're going to tell you next week. So buckle up for that. But in the meantime,
yeah,
buckle up for this.
Hello, and welcome to Buffering the Vampire Slayer, a podcast where we are watching every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer one at a time, spoiler-free. I am Jenny Owen Youngs.
And I am Kristen Russo, and this week we are talking about Season 4, Episode 22. If you did the math on that, you know it is the season finale. It is called Restless. And it's a big deal. It's a big episode. We're going to talk about it. But for now, let me tell you to stay tuned at the end of this podcast and the end of every podcast for an original song that's written by Jenny, which recaps the Buffy episode we are discussing.
Every podcast?
Every, all
WTF
all of them.
With Mark Maron?
Literally,
Cast
there's
of
a song.
Kings with Joanna Robinson?
Yep. Wow. Especially Cast
there's
of
There's a
Kings.
Song about Buffy at the end of every single, that I wrote.
It's miraculous.
I'm busy.
In fact, you're so.
I'm so tired. I should actually go. I don't think I can stay for the taping. I got songs to write.
You're right. You should go. And also, Jenny, if they're not listening to you sing a Buffy song at the end of every podcast ever created, I'm hoping that you are all listening to our sister podcast, Angel on Top. It is a podcast that talks about the series Angel in tandem with our podcast. It's hosted by Brittany Ashley and Laura Zach. It's amazing. It gets better every fucking week. I love it so much, and I love them so much. So you should get on that if you're not already.
It's so great. If you're not listening, you're just hurting yourself. So stop hurting yourself.
Yeah.
Restless was written and directed by Joss Whedon, a guy that you might have heard of, and it originally aired on May 23rd, 2000, which was the birthday of my first secret 8th grade girlfriend.
I like that it was your first secret 8th grade girlfriend, like you had another secret 8th grade girlfriend.
My secret first 8th grade girlfriend.
Wow.
My secret 8th grade first girlfriend. You get what I'm saying.
Happy birthday to you, secret girlfriend,
yes.
If you're out there. Was she a fan of Buffy?
No.
It wasn't even on yet. You were in 8th grade.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so this is the one where Buffy, Willow, Xander, and Giles experience dreams in which they are pursued by a mysterious figure. That's the IMDb description. This is a big deal episode in this series. Jenny is experienced in many ways, has written a lot of songs, but also watched the director's cut of
Yes, that's right. The director's commentary track. So I have made a lot of notes about things that Joss had to say about the episode, and I will be sharing them periodically.
And this episode, of course, you're probably familiar with it. You're listening to us talk about it, but it is, I would say, 85 to 90% in dream. The only pieces of this episode that are not in dream are the first few minutes and the last few minutes.
Yes.
So this is right on the heels, we are to believe, of them defeating Adam by bringing together their Scooby selves and all of their powers rip the Gak-covered uranium core out of his chest. Adam is dead. Ding dong. The Franken-monster is dead. And they are like, fuck this. We got to go over to Joyce's house, get some VHS tapes,
Blockbuster,
some popcorn,
ever heard of it?
Some nondescript red drink. Maybe it's raspberry fruit punch for Giles.
Oh, my God.
And we get a minute with Riley, don't we, Jenny?
He got a haircut.
So sorry
Riley
to all of your ears.
Riley got a haircut. Riley got a haircut.
Jenny
Riley
just
got
banged
a haircut.
Her whole fist on the arm of the
Speaking
chair.
Speaking of banging.
Uh-huh.
In the space of like 45 seconds, Riley manages to say that he needs to go in for a debriefing, let us know that they're not pinning anything on him. and also talk about his honorable discharge. And I just want to say,
you think that was intentional? Like, it had to be intentional,
well,
right?
Well, my real question here is, like, why is the military so horny? Right.
Hey, all that pent-up aggression, yeah. Those tight camo pants.
Right.
That'll make anyone have an honorable
Okay.
So Willow makes a little statement. So Riley basically tells them, like, I have enough information where they're not going to fuck with me, you know, like, so I'm good. And Willow's like, wow, it's almost like you're blackmailing the government. And almost looks
and
directly into
scratches.
The camera.
Yeah. And winks.
Riley is very uncomfortable.
You're probably wondering how I got here.
Riley, Riley, like, just an episode ago or a couple episodes ago was, like, you know, saying
a
things
lifer.
Like anarchy and punching out his general.
Yep.
But it seems he's recalibrated back to a place where he doesn't want to overthrow the government, so.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Joyce.
Yeah, speaking of overthrowing things.
Wow. That's just going to be your segue for... You're just going to take one of my words and repurpose it?
Okay. What? That's how segues are supposed to work, isn't it?
It is. You're right.
Yeah. So Giles, they're all about to hunker down and watch some blockbuster tapes.
Hunker down?
Oh, my God. And Giles is like, blah, 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 Joyce, are you sure you won't join us once we watch these videos? Maybe he could, like... yawn, maybe they could share popcorn, maybe he could stretch his arm.
Yeah,
over.
It's, this is like the thing where, like, you're all trying to pretend like you don't know mom and dad have totally boned on a cop car twice.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. But also dad just hangs out with teenagers.
Right, yeah,
it's very complicated. Giles occupies two worlds.
Also, I just want Joyce to, like, let loose a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, Joyce, take off your robe, have some fruit punch, sit down and watch some VHS tapes.
Honestly, like, what's she got?
Perhaps
going
your hand
on
will graze Giles's. Who knows what will happen? Anyhow, Joyce meets Riley for the first time, and I think that Joyce thinks that Riley is a hunk.
I think Joyce thinks, wow, the UC Sunnydale campus is really close to my house, and yet I've only just met this boy that my daughter has been dating for a year?
Yeah. I guess that is a long time.
A year?
True. Well, no, there was Parker. Womp womp.
Ew.
Hasn't been a full year, but yes. So Joyce meets all the men, goes upstairs in her robe, and they start the VHS marathon.
And everyone's out like a light.
Immediately, of course. And that's very believable. They've just defeated the big bad of the season. They're tired.
So it really takes it out of you, pulling the joining your... your forces on a spiritual and metaphysical level in order to pull out the uranium core from a gack-filled chest of a parasympathetic demonoid. I can't remember what they call him, but Adam.
Yeah.
You know, so they're tuckered out.
And so Jenny just made a gesture letting me know she has more to say before I segue us, but we are going to move after Jenny says whatever it is that she's going to say into the four dreams. So this is really it's kind of a fun episode, I think, to talk about because we really get to be like quadrant one, quadrant two, quadrant three, quadrant four.
Yeah, big clear divisions.
Yeah. But Jenny, what were you going to say?
I was going to say my first note from Joss's commentary track.
Mm-hmm.
Is about sort of like the episode as a whole. He talks about how in previous seasons, in seasons 2 and 3, they have like big double episode, like two-parter, to be continued, big event finales. And in this season, it was actually episodes 20 and 21 that were the big two-parter, finalized, doing away with the big bad kind of episodes. And then this episode he kind of viewed as a coda to sort of like check in with like where all the characters have been, are now, might be headed. Mm-hmm. You know, they all have had big transitional experiences in this season. Buffy has gone to college and gotten over the love of her life, who she had to kill and then who came back. Blah, 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 blah. She's moved on with her life. She's like starting to become, you know, also more of an adult in the traditional sense. Willow, same deal. And she's also, I don't know if you noticed, but she's been doing a lot of spells with that girl from the the Wicca wing of the Stevenson dorm. And let's see, Xander did not go to college. He's been working a series of like frustratingly dead-end feeling jobs.
Mm-hmm.
and trying to understand what his role in the group is. Giles, post-librarian depression syndrome happening.
And I feel like I read somewhere, too, that Joss was not doing, like, that Joss was not super thrilled with, like, how all of those storylines had come together. This was also a way for him to, like, redraw those lines that maybe got a little wiggly through the fourth season. Yeah, so we get a lot, and we'll go obviously through them one by one and talk about their arc. But this was a big first year in college for everybody,
or out of college,
yes,
or without
retired.
Yeah.
Hashtag retired.
Between projects, as Giles likes to self-identify.
So, Willow,
heard of her?
Who knows the square root of 1225? Willow, who's gentle of heart and nimble with a hard drive. Willow, 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 Willow.
Willow falls asleep with the cookie in her hand, which is just about the willowiest thing a willow could do.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
And the very first scene in Willow's dream is Tara without a shirt on, who is just sort of like looking at the camera, kind of the same way Tara looked at the camera when she said, I'm yours.
Whoa!
Right? It's the same look. It's that same, like, my eyes are a little glassed over. Mm-hmm. I'm very much here for you. Look, and she is, as we pan out, we see that Tara is, like, lying on her stomach, and Willow, with ink and, like, a paintbrush, is writing Greek letters on her back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jenny, this is, I know this might be surprising to you, but it's a poem by Sappho.
I'm shocked!
Did somebody say Sappho? Hey, everyone, here I am on the other side of that surprising bell to tell you that I have vanished Jenny just for a moment, don't worry, and I have a little surprise for us all regarding Sappho. I am here with Elise Knorr, who is a few things. Elise is an assistant professor of English at Regis University, a poet, a queer woman, somebody I have known personally for many, many, many years, and the author of many things, but namely your most recent book, Elise, called Mega City Redux, is out right now. So first of all, hi, Elise.
Hi, Kristen.
Thank you for being on Buffering the Vampire Slayer.
Thanks so much for having me. This is really awesome.
Your credentials are outstanding. I want to let you tell our wonderful listeners just like a little bit about this book that just came out, Mega City Redux.
Sure. It's a remix of a 15th century proto-feminist allegory, and it is about going on a feminist pilgrimage with Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Xena Warrior Princess, and Dana Scully from The X-Files to find a mythical city called the City of Ladies, which is a place where women can live safe from misogyny and sexism and sexist rhetoric.
That doesn't sound like it would be appealing at all to any of our listenership.
Right? It turns out you still need the city as much today as you did 600 years ago. But you get to have fun along the way, right? With all of our heroes.
Exactly. So for those of you, and I'm sure that we've let you know this in the show notes as well, but for those of you who literally paused this interview because you're screaming, you can find more about Elise and this wonderful book and all the other things that you do, Elise, at elisenorr.com, which is ALYSEKNORR.com. Okay, Elise, I have called you here today for a very important reason, which involves two queer witches within a dream, on the inside of a dream. Inside of that dream, one is painting Greek letters on the other one's naked back.
And as you do.
As you do, as you do. And those letters are actually a poem by somebody named Sappho. And I thought, I must know someone in the universe who can tell us about Sappho and just give us a little bit of, like, her history, what her deal is, and why perhaps this poem has been chosen to be the one written on Tara's back by Willow.
Sure. I mean, the easy answer is that it's, like, she's the gayest author you can find, right? She's the origin of the term lesbian to describe women who love women. She's also one of the best poets of all time. She's an ancient Greek lyric poet. We know very little about her life because she lived 2,500 years ago. But she is absolutely amazing. Her work is beautiful and very, very, very gay.
So here's what I know about Sappho, and this is why I called you. I had tried to look stuff up on Wikipedia, and I was like, this is not giving me what I need. But all I know is that when I hear Sappho, I think of the word sapphic, which pretty much means ladies who like ladies. And then I know that she lived on the Isle of Lesbos, which is where the term lesbian comes from. So like, what do we know? What does her poetry tell us about her identity as a lesbian? Do we know that she was a lesbian? Just tell us. Blow our minds, Elise.
So she definitely was a lesbian because she was from the Isle of Lesbos. And so that's what that meant at the time, was that anyone who's from the Island of Lesbos, or even wine that was from the Island of Lesbos would be lesbian. In fact, Aeolic Greek, which is the dialect she speaks, was also known as lesbian Greek. The term did not come to mean women who love women until around like the Victorian era. And it was used in medical literature to diagnose women who were attracted to other women as having an illness. And at first it was sapphic or invert or lesbian. It wasn't used as an identity marker until a little bit later, in like the 1950s. Women started to embrace the term, much like we have with queer. It used to be pejorative, but now we're going to use it as a proud identity marker. And so at that point, it became more of a source of a community term. And so, yeah, it's evolved a lot. But what we know about Sappho's sexuality is that a gay identity or a queer identity didn't really exist the way it does for us, this is how I describe my identity. But we know that her poems are about loving women, and her poems describe the beauty of women and the physical impact on her of loving women and being jealous of, like, you know, a woman who talks to a man and gets his attention. There's a beautiful poem called Fragment 31 about how much she hates that.
Wow, that sounds like a Hayley Kiyoko song.
It is, in fact, yeah. And actually, like, so her biggest impact, culturally now is maybe the fact that that's where the origin of lesbian came from. But as far as poetry goes, she influenced pretty much any poet writing a love poem, all the way up to, I would say, like, pop musicians today are influenced in some way by Sappho. Like, did you know the term bitter? You know the term bittersweet?
Of course.
That's Sappho. She made that up, except in Greek, it's she ordered it sweet bitter, which actually makes a lot more sense, because that's like the order that relationships go in when they don't last. It starts out sweet and it ends up bitter.
Oh no, Elise, you just gave me full body chills. Well, I guess Sappho gave me full body chills, but
yeah, no, 2,500 years ago. She's amazing.
Oh fuck. So this is why, you know what Wikipedia did not do is give me full body chills. This is why I knew we needed to talk to you directly. And so there's disagreement, right, about Sappho's life, about Sappho's history, about what she was doing when she was alive?
So there's a lot of, like, controversy and disagreement over the facts of her life and her biography, because the only things we know about her come from things that other writers wrote. We don't have any, like, direct accounts, right. And it's so, so old, and so much has been lost.
Right.
So there's, and then what complicates that is that she was so good at poetry that she sort of, like, other writers, male writers, saw that as a threat. They thought it was unnatural and, like, she must be overly masculine if she's that good at writing, because, like, women are stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, in the hundreds of years after her death, she became sort of a burlesque comic figure for Greek comedians. And she would just be this, like, stock figure. At first, she was kind of slut-shamed because the Isle of Lesbos, the women there were really known to be really beautiful. So at first, she was sort of parodied for being oversexed, hypersexual. And then they sort of attacked her lesbianism and made fun of that. So this all adds up to the fact that there are some accounts that she had a husband, right? And so everybody's like, oh, she had a husband. She wasn't as gay as, you know, she wasn't gay. She had this husband. This guy right here is writing about her having a husband. Well, it turns out that the person writing about her husband is a comic poet. And her husband's name is Kirkilus of Andros. And Kirkilus means, like, penis. And Andros means man. So the account of her husband that we have is basically like the Greek comic poet is saying, you know, that her husband's name was Dick Johnson from the Isle of Man.
Wow. So we can probably believe that this was not a serious account of a husband.
Yeah, yeah. But it's really weird because, like, there's all these, you know, and then there's a bunch of accounts that she, like, threw her off a cliff because she had her heart broken by this young sailor. But it's all just shit that's made up. Like, there's just so much about her that's, like, completely made up. that it's really, really, you know, intriguing and mysterious. And the fact that we don't even have many of her complete poems is also very mysterious and very exciting.
Yeah. And I was going to say, you know, this, it's like, I've never heard a story before about, you know, a really talented woman doing like really cool shit and then being like, you know, erased from history. It's shocking to me. So let's talk a little bit about the poem itself. I want to start. So the poem is called Ode to Aphrodite, though I've seen it written Ode to Aphrodite or Hymn to Aphrodite. Are both of those accurate?
Yeah, or Prayer to Aphrodite. Either one's fine. And then it's sometimes also known just as Poem 1, because it's actually the only complete poem of Sappho's that survives antiquity that we have. All of her other work is fragments.
You have the text of the poem, right? You have the words that are actually. So will you share those with us so that everyone can know what is written on Tara's back?
Sure. So this is the translation of Poem 1 by Anne Carson from her collection of Sappho translations called If Not Winter. Deathless Aphrodite of the spangled mind, child of Zeus who twists lures, I beg you, do not break with hard pains, O lady, my heart. But come here, if ever before you caught my voice far off, and listening left your father's golden house and came yoking your car. And fine birds brought you, quick sparrows over the black earth, whipping their wings down the sky through midair they arrived. But you, O blessed one, smiled in your deathless face, and asked what, now again, I have suffered, and why, now again, I'm calling out, and what I want to happen most of all in my crazy heart. Whom should I persuade, now again, to lead you back into her love? Who, O Sappho, is wronging you? For if she flees, soon she will pursue. If she refuses gifts, rather will she give them. If she does not love, soon she will love, even unwilling. Come to me now. Loose me from hard care and all my heart longs to accomplish. You be my ally.
What the fuck, Sappho?
You know what I mean? It's good stuff.
Holy shit. It is. And how beautiful and wonderful that we have you here. We have this translation by Anne Carson, who I'm sure so many of our listeners already know of. If you don't know Anne Carson, get to it. Get thee to Anne Carson. And that we get to, you know, you watch the show, you know, maybe you know it's a poem by Sappho, but to get to actually hear the words is really beautiful. So thank you for reading that for us.
Sure. So the poem is basically Sappho asking Aphrodite, the goddess of love and beauty, to come to her aid in persuading the girl who she loves to love her back. And I guess it's also just important to know that Sappho's poems as a whole sort of allude to the fact that poetry itself is a form of magic, and that it can manipulate reality. Like, language can manipulate reality. And so there's like a kind of magical tone in this poem, especially with the idea of Aphrodite. Like, I will kind of, like, it's almost like Sappho's calling Aphrodite down, like casting a spell.
Yeah.
And Aphrodite promises to intercede on Sappho's behalf, almost like magic in this magical way.
Wow. Elise, fuck. At the beginning of the interview, Elise asked me if it was okay to curse. And I was like, yes. And then proceeded to say fuck like 40 times in this interview myself. but I do think it's just so beautiful. It's like, you know, I think maybe some people listening to this knew pieces of it, and some of them, like me, probably didn't know any of it. And so to get the chance to be able to watch this scene and to think about this relationship that we've seen in season 4, like just blossoming, that we're like rolling into season 5 with Tara and Willow. And that really, like, one of the last things that we see them do together is this, the connection between like poetry and magic. The erasure of Sappho as a lesbian, the erasure of Sappho as like a woman writer, it all really feels very Buffy. and I cannot thank you enough, Elise, for being here and for talking to us and for bringing all of this wonderful information to our ears.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh my goodness. Is there anything better than Elise Knorr talking about Sappho?
Not one thing I can think of. Oh, except maybe a slow motion kitten.
Oh my God.
Just a nice slow mo shot of a tiny kitten.
So this piece of the dream has many things. A slow mo kitten, but also a lot of words. Like, I wrote down in my notes way more quotes than I normally do, because I feel like there's so much meaning attached to like every phrase in this whole episode. I also want to say that this is not the first time we've seen a cat in a dream, right? There was a very prominent cat in the Faith Buffy dream.
Yep, yep, yep.
Cats are... Jenny, have you seen Captain Marvel?
I have not yet.
Well, there's a very, very wonderful plot line in Captain Marvel.
I've heard there's a hot cat.
That revolves around a cat named Goose. I think
a cat named Goose. I had a cat named Frog growing up.
Oh, cute. I think Goose was the name Goose. Well, actually, I don't know because
like
I don't know
short
comics.
For Augustus or something?
Augustus. No, I took it because they were Air Force. You know, it's like all Air Force.
Like
so
Goose
from Maverick. Yeah, exactly. Anyhow, my point being that cats are mystical, magical creatures. They certainly belong in dreams. They certainly belong in Captain Marvel. They certainly belong in all these places because they're not really animals, are they? They're weird, mystical creatures. So Willow is saying, you don't know everything about me. Tara is saying they will find out about you. And that's like really one of the, that is the core theme of Willow's dream, right? Is like people keep telling her she's wearing a costume to
right,
you know,
right,
and she's
right,
like,
right,
but
right,
this
right.
is me, this is me. And she's also at the same time afraid that people will find out about her.
Yeah, and what Joss has to say about that.
Oh, yes. What does Joss have to say?
Is that that is the misdirect that keeps sort of like cropping up throughout Willow's dream. Like this identity thing, and you know, the viewer is meant to be like, oh, she's talking about her sexuality, until we get to the scene where Buffy pulls Willow's costume off and reveals what Willow is afraid people will really find out about her,
right.
Which is that deep down she's still the same nerd that she was in this, you know, in the pilot episode, essentially.
Right, and I also think that there's a lot of layers to this, not to make a pun on, like, pulling off one layer of clothing and there being another layer, but it's like, yeah, I think part of it is that Willow is afraid that people will know that she's still the same nerd she always was. But I think more than that, for me, it's that Willow feels like perhaps she's not being recognized for the growth and the change that she has made since that time, that people still view her as that version of herself when she knows that she has grown and changed and evolved and is different than that person, you know? So I think there's a little bit of both in it, but I don't think that it's just that Willow's afraid that people will know she's a nerd. I think there's a lot here for me with sexuality too, of course, right? That Willow has just come out. And I think that when we come out of the closet, if you want to use that phrase, it's hard to feel like people might not think you're just playing at something.
Right, right, right.
Or that people might feel like they knew all along, like from whatever angle you want to take it from, that it's hard to feel like when you come out to people, it's as authentic to them as it feels to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're also seeing Willow struggling with that the reality of her feelings for Tara and her feelings as a queer woman are probably not being realized the way that she would like them to be, you know. I mean, all of us feel like that.
Mm-hmm,
you know, especially when we're talking to like cis straight people. It's like, yeah, they get it, but do they get it? Maybe not.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Right.
As much as Willow might be thinking that like people aren't perceiving her growth mm-hmm. and the ways in which she's developed over the last season, the last like 4 years. I think Willow is equally unable to fully accept the fact that she has grown. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is serious classic imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like she definitely, as much as she like knows about herself, she also
doesn't.
Yeah.
Totally. 100%.
So I have a few things I'd like to talk about.
Yes.
In this bedroom scene or dorm room scene.
We're still in the with Tara and Willow.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay, so first of all, one of them is like about the kitten. One of them is like she hasn't told us her name yet, which I'm happy to hear because we've all been thinking it. Nobody's been saying it. Miss Kitty Fantastico is not a cat name. You may not. I forbid it. It's just not practical.
Yeah, it's a lot to say.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see what. That cat's name is. I'm sure we'll see lots more of that cat, right?
I'm sure.
What do they
will.
Live like 10 years or something? 20 years? Also, I learned from the commentary that when Willow pulls back the curtain and looks out on the desert, that's actually there. They moved the wall. They built a wall, a Tara's dorm room wall, into the desert so they could get that shot through the window and out into the sand.
That's very cool. Before we move into the next piece of Willow's Dream 2, I do want to go back to what you were saying about the cat and the name, right? Because this is like a double, it has two meanings. She hasn't told us her name yet. They're talking about the cat. But as we see in the scene where there's a slow-mo cat, and also we see the snippet of the first Slayer.
Right, right.
I think there's something here, and we're going to talk about the first Slayer, and I would move, Jenny, that we call the first Slayer Senea moving forward, because one of the problematic pieces of the way that this is treated is that she does not have a name, even though she does. We heard Willow say her name in the last episode. Her name is Senea, and she's not given a name. She's also not given a voice. We're going to get there. We're going to talk about these things. But there's a lot of problematic stuff with Senea, and the first piece, I think, is underlined here with the parallel of, like, she hasn't told us her name yet. Actually, maybe the cat hasn't, but Senea did. You know, right. Senea's name, so use it. Thanks, guys. So then we go to school. That's the next dream sequence for Willow. And this is where, like, the boys get involved. It's like she starts with Tara, and then when she transitions to this next phase of her dream, it's Xander and Oz. And they are very, like, male-gazy. Well, Oz is just kind of Oz, and Xander's taking the male gaze for the team here, saying, you know, she does spells with Tara. Oz says he heard about that, and then we get this line.
Sometimes I think about two women doing a spell, and then I do a spell by myself.
Two things.
Yes, Jenny.
First of all, Oz's face when Xander says that, he's just like, dude, are you fucking serious, man? Secondly, you're not alone, Kristen. Joss talks in the commentary about how this was like, this kind of pulls you out of the dream a little bit because it's not Willow having, you know, a perception of something. Willow has left the shot and she's like gone on to do her thing. This line happens and Joss was like, this kind of like breaks up the dreaminess of it, but it made me laugh.
So oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and it's very like, you know, our history with Xander, our feelings about Xander. It's going to get real fucking messy with Xander and these ladies later.
But interesting stuff to say about Xander after that. Some unforeseen insights.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to digging into when we get there.
Has anything to do with a Speedo or no?
No, I would call that an outsight.
Oh, wow.
Or an in-my-heart sight.
So, right. So we get a little pulled out, as Jenny said, as Joss said, whatever, this moment happens. It's cringy. It's funny. It's whatever. And we then go to the theater. It's really funny the way that this whole thing is done, I think. We get Harmony back. We have Buffy as a flapper. We have Riley as a cowboy.
Cowboy guy.
And this is where we begin to hear Buffy and other people say things like, your costume, you know, is perfect.
Right,
no one's going to know the truth.
There's a quick callback to Nightmares. When Willow's like, oh, God, it's not Madame Butterfly, is it?
Right. and Giles and Harmony have this amazing, like, Giles comes out. He's obviously, like, the director of the show.
Looks great in an ascot.
Yes.
I love that as a part of his speech to the group, Giles is saying, everyone Willow's ever met is in the audience, including us, which is so dream, peak dream.
Yeah.
And he's like going on and on and on, and Harmony's like biting around his ears, like from behind his shoulders.
Really good comedy happening with Giles and Harmony, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And oh, hey, who's this guy?
Oh, it's the cheese man, Jenny.
He's made a little space for the cheese slices.
We're going to get to hear a bit from David Wells, who plays the cheese man later. And this is the first appearance that we get of him.
So exciting.
I also just want to talk really quickly. There's a moment right before we see the cheese man for the first time. Willow is backstage. Everybody's talking. And then everybody like goes silent, but they're all still talking. And she's turning around very slowly. There are a few moments in this episode where I'm like, damn, that's beautifully done. And I mean, the whole episode is, but this is like a peak dream amazingness. So I'm going to just give it a shout.
As we transition to this scene where we're seeing Harmony, Riley, and Buffy all on stage together.
Oh my God, it's the best.
It's amazing. And Riley's all like, little lady, can I hold those milk pails for you? And then,
I've come looking for a man. A salesman.
This is the perfect, like, this is what your brain does when you, like, have seen a play. It's like, you know what that play actually is? This very bizarre mashup of, like, everything you've ever seen.
I want to just play a little sound clip from the play that is one of my favorites.
But what else could I expect from a bunch of low-rent, no-account hoodlums like you? Hoodlums, yes, I mean you and your friends, your whole sex. Throw them in the sea for all I care. Throw them in and wait for the bubbles. Men with your groping and spitting all groin, no brain, 3 billion a year passing around the same worn-out urge. Men with your sales.
So, yeah, it's pretty great. And also, this is another beautiful shot. It's like Riley in the foreground, then Buffy in the middle ground, and Harmony in the background. They're all in the shot, and they're all in focus.
Yeah, so this is achieved with the use, I learned today, of a Fraser lens, which allows you to access extreme depth of focus, so you can see all of those characters as far back as they go in great detail.
Pretty cool.
He also, Joss also talks about how, you know, they specifically were like leaning into like the like milkmaid thing and the like Chicago flapper thing and then the like hyper masculine cowboy to like really polarize sort of like gender presentation here. And he talks about how when Harmony says the answer to a question that Giles asks, he's like, no. And then when Riley says the same exact answer, he's like, yes. And that was like intentional, an intentional nod to
the patriarchy.
Wow.
That's right.
Very cool. And how on the nose is that, since when we are coming out and we're questioning our sexuality, the patriarchy and all of those systems that we once thought were real come into question.
Sure.
That like this all really adds up. This is a great episode. We already said it. We're going to say it again. So then we go to the classroom, and this is immediately clocked, I think, for all of us. This is the classroom. It is the classroom where Willow taught for Jenny Callender, right? It is.
Yep.
It's where we, like, really first got to know Willow.
Mm-hmm.
And Buffy is like, hey, take off your costume. And she rips it off. And I think, I don't know how you all felt watching this for the first time, when you saw this episode for the first time, but I think probably most of us thought she's going to be naked, right? Like, it'll be a dream where you're naked.
That's how class dreams work.
But what's funny... not funny, haha, but what's interesting is that for Willow, I think she's more vulnerable thinking about that version of herself than she is being naked.
Right.
That, like, this is really her weakest spot. And it reminded me, this is the dress that Cordelia said it was, you know, from Sears. Like, it's just, there's a lot of rooted memories for Willow in this time in her life.
I think her outfit rocks.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cute. Also, they nailed her hair. Like, her hair
Yeah, she's got a very successfully applied wig that looks super accurate. Also, in the commentary, Joss talks about how, like, everyone got, like, very emotional because they're, like, you know, filming the finale of season four, and everyone was immediately like, oh, season one.
Yeah.
Actually, he kind of goes on to say, like, more like episode one, Willow, because even, like, after the first episode, the network was like, she's got to be less square looking.
Right.
So they somehow, I would have rather seen Willow wear softer side of Sears outfits for, like, a whole season than, like, the
just
bizarro,
the
like, pom-pom animal sweaters.
So I thought another part of this that was interesting is that, like, once she gets to the classroom, we see that Anya is there. And I think Anya is a sore spot for Willow because of Xander.
Yeah, yeah.
And that whole thing. And then, of course, everyone's true nightmare, your current girlfriend and your ex talking to each other.
Oh, God.
Oh,
like,
my
whispering,
God.
Kind of like looking canoodly.
Yeah, Oz is like, I tried to warn you.
Oh, God.
You know, like, it's, I'm upset and I am not Willow. So I can only imagine how Willow is feeling. And then Buffy just watches when Saneya comes in and attacks Willow. Willow's the first one to be attacked.
Right. And she is kind of choking Willow, and there's an effect that looks like the life is being sucked out of her. So I just want to make a note of the method.
Yes.
The approach, the area of the body that's being impacted as we move forward.
Oh, interesting. I wonder why you want to talk about the method and way in which these four characters are attacked. We will see. So the dream ends for Willow, and she is left gasping on the couch. We pan out. We see them all asleep. Willow is gasping. And this is, you know, there's a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street-y things happening here, because there's a lot of, like, in the dream, out of the dream. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more as we move forward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But for now, we go along into Xander's dream. Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top three all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
I love this one. I love them all.
So Xander had picked Apocalypse Now as the movie, and Xander and his association with like soldier stuff has been pretty strong throughout the series, especially since Halloween when he developed soldier skills that have been called upon many times. But there's also a masculinity thing here, right? It's like even at the beginning, before they all fall asleep, he's like, "Well, I got Apocalypse Now, but don't worry, I got some like chick and Brit flicks too." You know, like he's like, "I want the fighting and this stuff because I'm a man." Which is a major sore spot for Xander, right? That, like, he's been the patriarchal dude for so much of the series because he struggles with his own feelings of, like, not being masculine enough, strong enough, not being a big enough contributor to the Scooby gang, like, on and on and on.
Want to note here that as they're watching Apocalypse Now, Giles says something like, "Oh, I see now, it's about the journey," which is kind of like a meta comment, according to Joss, on the episode, on the nature of the episode. This episode is not about a story that goes from A to B and then climaxes at C and then has like a little outro. This episode is about the journey through the psyches of all the characters.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's good.
And even like, I mean, when we get to Buffy's dream, like, it's not what we'd expect from, it's not how we'd expect Buffy to wrap this up at all.
No, somebody said in on Twitter, actually, when we were talking about it in that space, somebody was like, "I just can't believe that Angel wasn't in Buffy's dream," right? And that's just like one way.
That must have been like a scheduling. I feel like I actually read that there was like a scheduling.
It had to be, right?
Conflict with the Angel finale.
And that's also the reason that we have Harmony and not Cordelia should have been in this
episode.
So there had to be. It had to be a scheduling thing. Because I think both of those characters would have been featured in this episode. We get Principal Snyder. We get, you know, we get all these humans. So Xander goes upstairs.
Also, you know who's not in anybody's dream is Faith.
Yeah, what the fuck? What was Faith doing? What was Faith specifically doing? Not Eliza, but Faith. So Xander goes upstairs to pee. There's this weird exchange. I mean, they're all weird, but like Buffy's like, "Do you need help with that?" And he's like, "I've got a whole system.
Yeah,
I'm okay."
I love that.
And Jenny, I'd like to play a little clip of a song that played in my head when Xander got to the top of the stairs and
Joyce was
standing there.
Is it Lady in Red?
Yes, it is.
Cool. This scene is so great.
The whole episode is so great.
But this in particular, like the way, like the language of their exchange, the like, "I'm a conquistador," "I'm a comfortador," the slow piano music that's happening, the way that some, like for a couple of lines, like Joyce is, it's just like a slow-mo, like, you know, slowly panning shot across Joyce's face while she's speaking, but she's not moving, you know, her mouth isn't moving. Just like voiceover. And then there's one where it like pans, she's like, "Why don't you rest a while?" And it like pans all the way to the bed, which is like already turned down. It's like, hot mom!
Bop, chicka, bop, bop.
Hot mom!
Yeah, I read somewhere actually that this was really like that Joss was really excited about this as well for Joyce, because so many times on a set, you know, or on a show, when you're playing the mom, you're like playing the mom and you don't get to be sexy, which let's think about that fucked up shit for a second.
But Ben Candy.
Right. And so we get a little more of like what Christine Sutherland can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and also the fact of the matter that, of course, you can be a mom and sexy at the same time.
Right.
So this is very fun. And then Xander's like, "I'll be right with you.
Dude.
I'm going to go to the bathroom."
Yep.
And
he puts his system to work.
Yep. And the minute that he, like, gets himself ready to pee, it, like, turns around and we see that there are many gentlemen in lab coats studying.
Yeah. The entire initiative is taking copious notes. They're at the ready.
Yes.
To observe and assess. And I have an amazing one-liner that probably wasn't meant the way we're all going to take it from the commentary. Joss said, "I think that's the best use of the initiative we had all year." And we're all like, correct.
Salt the earth. So So then, of course, Xander's like, gotta go. And the biggest, I think the biggest piece of Xander's dream is that all paths lead back to the basement for him.
100%.
Right? This is, like, Xander is struggling with his own imposter syndrome that, like, he doesn't feel like he has done anything with himself. He thinks he's always going to be a failure, and that is why every time he turns a corner, he's back in that basement where he feels trapped and stuck.
Right, and in between, he's just in other places that, like, reinforce how stuck he feels in the basement.
Yeah.
Oh, we also hear the doorknob rattling in a threatening way up at the door at the top of the stairs. And we don't know what's going on there yet.
But you think, I mean, you think that it is the same thing at the top of the stairs that was in Willow's dream. You think it's Sinéa,
right?
Because that's the thing that's chasing them, we think. But of course, we find out that is not what's at the top of the stairs. Well, sort of is. Whatever.
It's
we'll
the
get
whole thing.
There.
But we go then to the playground where Spike and Giles, Spike, watcher in training, and
this
Giles,
is
watcher mentor, are just like going to town on that swing set.
This is amazing. I lobby for a t-shirt that is this swing set with the two of them on the swings in suits.
Dude,
I would wear
that would rock.
Shirt.
That would rock. Spike's like a son to me.
Oh my God.
It's amazing.
And this is, again, like, you know, we're in Xander's dream. This is Xander feeling like Giles doesn't approve of him. He doesn't have a father figure,
right?
Everybody's
right.
better than him.
This shit where playground Xander looks over at the ice cream truck and watches ice cream Xander.
Yeah.
Like, and the way that they, like, hold on either of those Xanders at, like, different times within the scene for, like, longer than is necessary, like, just, like, adds this layer of, like, meaning and resonance that isn't inherent just in, like, what you're seeing, but also, like, with the added consideration of the time that is spent there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we get, of course, Sandbox Buffy.
Sandbox Buffy with the desert behind her. She calls Xander Big Brother, and he's like, brother.
Which is, that's one of those moments you were talking about where it goes to his face and it really stays on his face for a very long time.
Yeah. A watcher scoffs at gravity. It's important to note that that is said.
That's amazing.
And then we get a perspective shift to Ice Cream Xander.
Yes. And now here we are.
Here we are in the truck. I think it's going to be a big year for vengeance, Anya says.
And this is, so Anya says, do you know where you're going? And just to take us back a step.
Oh, yeah.
You've always got to be moving forward was said before. There's a lot of lines throughout that are said to Xander or at Xander that are like, what are you doing? Where are you going? You got to keep moving, et cetera.
Right.
Xander is like, society has rules and borders to Anya because she's like, I want to have vengeance. And it's like, I love this because he says it in the dream. And it's like, you can almost see the inner workings of his dream mind of like, society has rules and borders. Hey, what's another rule and border that's been broken recently in my perception of the world? Willow is fucking Tara. Like, you know, like he goes right from that societal rules and structures to turn around and see Willow and Tara at the back of the ice cream truck. And they are, of course, not Willow and Tara, really.
They're like sexed up dominatrix Willow and
they're
Tara.
They're like Bratz doll.
Yeah, yeah. They're Willow just like, Tara. They're like a wild, hypersexualized caricature versions of themselves. Which is, of course, because, like, you know, we're seeing it from Xander's perspective.
Right. And even, yeah, it's like, it's weird to me. I mean, it's obviously, many of you talked about this scene, like, can you believe how fucked up this, blah, blah, blah. Like, of course it's fucked up, right? But it also seems very hyper aware of itself. And it gets to be because this is such a far cry from what Willow and Tara are.
That we
see, you know, this divide, and it's, I don't know, like, maybe I'm leaving too much room for Xander, but to me, having not watched the director's commentary, but it just seemed like even Xander was a little like, wait a minute, like, I think that I guess this is sexy, but like, what is happening?
Yeah, so Joss hilariously refers to this as the longest lesbian kiss on network television up to this
point.
But of course, we don't see one millisecond of it,
right?
But the network made them cut down Xander's reaction time.
Gasp!
I know.
Oh my God.
I know, it's fucking bananas.
That is, we're playing the fucking patriarchy jingle again, God damn it.
The patriarchy!
More like the gatriarchy, am I right?
Wow, Jenny, that's my favorite note so far.
It's wild, right? Okay, cool. So he takes this opportunity also to talk about the way that this is reflective of how Xander relates to most people on the show in a sexual way, mm-hmm. one way or another, either women that he desires or men that he is feels emasculated by, or
right.
a particular woman he feels, two particular women he feels emasculated by, whatever. And then Joss calls back to the conversation with Joyce, the conquistador, the like trope of men always looking for the next conquest,
right?
And how actually Xander is seeking, because of his home life, which we see even a little bit, you know, more of a window into as the dream progresses, because of his home life, he is looking to fill a void. And what the messaging that he has received up to this point in his life is the way you fill this void is via conquest. And that's how you feel manly and you feel whole and whatever.
Right.
But Joss asserts here that he's actually what he's seeking, but doesn't know that he's seeking is comfort mm-hmm. and familial and maternal love that doesn't exist in his family life.
Right, right. Deep.
Which I thought was pretty interesting.
I want to just shout out Anya, who...
Dude.
And I know this is like Xander's dream version of Anya, but I genuinely believe that if the two of them were in an ice cream truck and Xander was like, can I go make out with that, actual Anya would be like, yeah, fine. Which is like literally totally. Her response. She's like, whatever.
Yeah,
I'm going to steer with no hands. So
you do whatever makes you happy. Okay, so Xander starts like walking back through the truck. And I want to just point out the way that Joss talks about the green screen, right? They wanted to do, I think it's called rear projection or something, like old Hitchcock movies, the way it would be when you were like looking at two people in the front or back seat of the car and the way that shit would move. They couldn't do that because it's like too big of a rig, I guess, mm-hmm. to get set up. So they opted for green screen, which still looks, you know, bizarre and wonderful and dream. But because the aspect ratio on Hulu is wider than on the DVDs, if you watch it on Hulu, there's a part where he walks by a window and it goes from showing like the street they're driving down to just like a big like blue glowing blank.
Oh,
in the window where they just
they
were
didn't
like
fill
it's
in
out of frame. We don't need to fill it in right. anymore. And then he just like keeps crawling back and back and back and back and back until oh god, he's in the basement
again. Jenny, I think this is a great time for us to hear a little bit from David Wells, who plays the Cheese Man, because of course Xander gets to the basement and the Cheese Man is there and he is saying these with his slices of cheese. Will not protect you. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, I appreciate you guys asking me to come in.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised by it, pretty nifty. Yeah.
The fandom, the Buffy fandom, is massive. They're
I'm shocked by it.
It's
I mean, you guys contacted me and I went on the internet and I went, some girl wrote a song to the Cheese Man. And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. My son's 18. And I'm going, look at this. He's going, wow, Dad.
Yeah. And the Cheese Man. Do you know what a big deal the Cheese Man is?
No, not at all. Except I have gone places and people, you were the Cheese Man. I'm going, yeah. I mean, and they're going, oh, man, it was so great. I'm going, I wasn't on screen, but like, I don't know, very little.
Right.
But, I guess, Buffy was a good show. Creatively, it was an interesting show, especially at the time. So I guess people hook onto that, I guess.
Yeah. And you, like, the way that Joss talks about it in the director's commentary for the episode is that, like, the Cheese Man is the thing that everyone asks him about.
That
and
is
he's
so
like,
weird.
That is the one thing in the episode that has literally
no meaning. I mean, you guys asked me about how the audition process went. I mean, I went into the audition and I don't remember. Usually I go to a lot of auditions and there's like 20 other guys that look a lot like me.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
I think I was the only one there.
You know, really?
Because I went in and it wasn't in a casting office. It was with Josh and it was in his, I don't know if it was his office or something. I just remember it was this big space, and there were offices around. There was a big open space, and I'm sitting there, and there was nobody. I mean, it was just me, you know. I mean, and that happens occasionally. So, you know, but usually they've got a bunch of people. I mean, I remember one time the casting breakdown said, "We're looking for a David Wells type." This was 30 years. This is a long time ago, you know. And the guy and my manager said, "You want David Wells?" I didn't get the job. I didn't get the job. You know, but so but occasionally somebody. I don't know that he knew my work or anything, but he must have somewhere or somehow, you know.
And what did he say? Like, what did you know about the role?
I knew nothing about it. I mean, I had the sides, and I tend to play – I've played a lot of eccentric characters in the past, I don't know, when you're playing these sort of obscure or absurd characters, you know, I play a lot of characters that have a different take on life or a different take on the world, and you just have to really commit to it, and really, you know, the cheese becomes very valuable, and what you're doing is very important, and what you have to say and impart is very important. And he gave me very, very little direction. I just did something with Ryan Murphy, who's kind of like him, and these guys are really creative and really brilliant. And Ryan Murphy never said a word to me. You know what I mean? I mean, he hired me, and I read somewhere later that I like or I don't like, and I hire people, and then I just kind of let them go. And I noticed that, and I think maybe that was kind of what Josh was doing, you know.
Wow. With this character, with the cheese man, you know, there's what, three lines, and you know, you talked about knowing that the cheese was very important. Did you have any larger story for the cheese man in your mind?
Well, it's just a feeling more than something specific. It's just a feeling of possession and ownership of the cheese and what it means to you. And it can mean it just becomes very personal to you, and then what you're trying, it's really a lot about the other people, more so about, you know, it's really like bringing them in, getting them involved, making sure they understand, making sure they care, taking care of them. And when you do that, it sort of takes you out of yourself, and it puts it over there, and so then you've got a chance of connecting.
Right. The Cheese Man, I just want to let you know, is so iconic within the universe that starting last year, we started throwing an annual prom for our listeners, and we threw the first one here in LA at the Ace, and someone came in cosplay as the Cheese Man.
Oh, God bless them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, it's pretty special.
So they were wearing cheese? Or yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, they had the full suit,
glasses.
And
Yeah.
I can't remember. I think it was cheddar, but I'm not sure.
That's a massive question, actually.
Yeah. Everybody wants to know.
American. I think what I was wearing, I think that was American cheese that I was wearing. But it was real cheese.
So it was real cheese?
Yeah, it was real cheese. It was all real cheese.
Did they do anything to adhere it to your head?
I think it just kind of, have you ever taken a piece of cheese?
Yeah,
it kind of just sticks.
A lot of people have asked this question. It's very timely. There's a viral video going around right now where a parent throws a slice of American cheese at the baby and it sticks to the baby's head and it just went nuts. And so when we told people we were doing this interview, they said, "Does David know about the baby
Oh, poor baby.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's a very funny video, but it displays more than anything the adhesion,
the natural
property.
Yeah,
of
yeah
the
I think I don't remember, but I remember. I think it just stuck there. You know,
wow.
I don't think it was a lot of thought about placement and everything. I mean, I just put it up there. Okay.
A couple of our listeners wrote in and wondered about dreams, since this whole episode is in, you know, four different dreams, and wondered if you had a crazy dream that you remember of your own, or a dream that you've had that's recurring, or anything.
Well, I always wanted to fly, but I think that everybody wanted that, right?
I never got a flying dream.
I never got off the ground, but I always want. I mean, I was working at it. I was always working at it, and just out of people's reach. But it never. But I've always wanted to. I've always wanted, you know, that dream, and that's recurred. And it's probably for a lot of people flying.
Yeah. Have you flown in your dreams?
I usually fall.
Yes, fall.
Yeah.
I've definitely
had
a lot of falling dreams as well.
I've almost gotten off the ground and not quite.
Wow.
But But when you're playing it, you know, you're playing, you're not playing it as a dream. You're, playing it, you're in this situation and you need to help these people.
With the cheese.
With the cheese. And the cheese, you know, the cheese could set them free.
Truly.
Are they doing a reboot of this?
The rumor has
allegedly something is in the works. There's very little information about it. But apparently.
Oh, wow. What if the Cheese Man returns?
Oh, my God. The Cheese Man's aged a little. Since,
haven't we all?
Hey, the beauty of being a character in a dreamscape is that you can come back in any form you
want. Right.
And still be believable. Yeah, you know, it's really, I think, the hardest on the people who played the vampires in the series.
Right,
because they
vampires
have
aged.
And they cannot come back.
Right.
Unless
right.
there's some plot hole where they aged.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you like cheese?
Munster. I like Munster, but Munster. Everybody likes Munster,
sure,
right?
Yeah, Munster. People's cheese.
Yeah. I like Munster, but I'm not that not as much. And then my son tells me dairy's bad, you know. So I'm trying to cut out a lot of it. But I do like Munster cheese. I wish I could tell you guys it all meant something special. And there's a secret, and the Cheese Man's going to come back and have his own series. And, what the Cheese Man means to me, it doesn't necessarily have to have anything to do with what it means or what he means to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it can mean what it means to them, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Thank you for taking
the time. Oh, thank you guys. I enjoyed it. I hope, I came across like the Cheese Man.
Yeah.
You know, didn't disappoint.
Yes. Oh, intriguing, he can't, interesting.
He can't be the Cheese Man.
Leaving us wanting more.
Yeah,
you know?
That's so, you know, anticlimactic. That's the guy?
No, people are going to be absolutely thrilled. Thank you.
Well, thank you guys.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much to David for sitting down with us. How fun. We were just so excited because really this character is like, this is a cult TV show and this is a cult character. It's like
honestly,
cult on cult.
Remember when somebody cosplayed as the Cheese Man at our first prom?
I do.
Iconic.
Jenny, I'm going to post that picture of you and the Cheese Man at our first prom.
Hell yes.
To coincide with this episode. So we come out of the basement again, and we're back in the school hallway. My two favorite parts about this sequence, this dream piece, is the lighting, which I think is unbelievable, especially the stark contrast, like when they're in green and the scene behind them is in red, you know, what have you.
Right, yeah, it looks
and
so
then,
good.
Of course, the language.
Right.
Which reminded me of, I don't remember the name of the episode, which is the episode where Giles is the demon and he speaks.
Oh, A New Man.
A New Man, where he's speaking to Xander
Fjarl,
and he's speaking
right.
Fjarl. Right. But this is in French, and I think there's two languages, but I only wrote down French, that both Giles and Anya wind up speaking to him in. And I want to tell everybody, I'm sure a lot of you super fans already know what's said here, but I wanted to let everybody know what was being said.
Oh, please. I don't even know what's being said.
So Giles in English says, "The others have all gone ahead. Now listen carefully. Your life may depend on what I'm about to tell you. You need to get to," and then it switches to French. What he says is, "You need to get to the house where we're all sleeping. All your friends are there having a wonderful time and getting on with their lives. The creature can't hurt you there." Xander says, "I can't understand. Go where?" Giles, still in French, says, "Oh, for God's sake, this is no time for your idiotic games. Anya rushes over." She's also dubbed in French, and she says, "Xander, you have to come with us now. Everybody is waiting for you." Giles, "That's what I've been trying to tell him," et cetera, et cetera. So they are, you know, like, it's not just French gibberish. It is, they are the actual lines. They are trying to say, like, come back. You have to get to this place. You need to get away. You need to get protection.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we go
to Apocalypse Now.
To Apocalypse Now. And there's this really beautiful camera. Xander gets turned upside down as the camera flips like the other. It's a cool camera move that they do to transition.
Which, if I was understanding correctly, is a scene that happened, like a thing that happens in Apocalypse Now.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. And I and Jenny, maybe you got this from the director's commentary, but I read a lot about this episode before we taped, and one of the things that I read was that they actually had on set like the VHS of Apocalypse Now playing when they were filming this scene, because it is a shot by shot recreation of a scene from the movie.
Yes, and who do we have here but Armin Shimerman,
friend of the pod. If you don't listen to all of our episodes, you might not know this, but Armin Shimerman was our very first, like,
interview of any kind.
Of any.
We talked to Steven.
We talked to Steven.
Of course.
Right.
But he was
our first.
Armin was,
like,
the first person we didn't know who we reached out to.
Yeah.
And who said yes.
So if you haven't checked that out, you should definitely check it out. Our interview with Armin Shimerman back from season one. It's such a delight to see Principal Snyder.
Dude, I love "Where You're From, Harris." And Xander's like, "Well, the basement mostly."
Right.
Which, like, we're getting very clear messaging.
Right, right. Where are you heading? Your time is running out.
I'm supposed to meet Tara and Willow and possibly Buffy's mom.
Right. Xander's like, I'm not feeling sexy anymore, but I know that I was supposed to be. Maybe having some sex.
Yeah, yeah.
He says this again, "I'm a confortador." And then after this, like, shot by shot recreation with Snyder, who of course is like another, like, authority figure, like, you know, like, this all, it all lines up with what we've been talking about. We get a really cool shot, and they do this a couple of times, I think, in this episode, where they use the set as the set is built, but they use it to break the the walls of that set. So Xander goes from Giles's to the school to the dorm into the closet. The camera follows him on that journey.
Yeah,
which is
yeah.
Really...
All of these sets just pushed up against each other and connected.
And when you think about too, like, you know, the camera work is really incredible, and also the lighting. Like, think about that. They have to light this as he goes. All these different sets are lit for Xander to be lit, but also for them to be. It's just really, really incredible. I also wrote, at one point during this journey that Xander goes on, we go through the set of I'm a Slave for You, or Slave for You, the Britney Spears music video.
The slatted. That looks like just like a production hallway. There's like clipboards hanging up and stuff that they just like left.
But if you want to do like a side-by-side, go take a screenshot of Britney Spears' Slave for You video and then this slatted hallway. I think it's the same.
Yeah,
I think
they
use the same thing. And of course, where do we wind up, Jenny?
Back in the basement.
Back in the basement. Now, I've already said this, but we have a long history with Xander. We call out Xander a lot. Xander's done a lot of problematic things, continues to do some, but he's growing and changing, and we've been on that journey with him. But we haven't really spoken too much about his family life. We've learned a little bit and a little bit and a little bit. And I think that this dream, the finale of season four, we get more of an insight into Xander's root. Xander's family than we have to date. And, that door opens at the top of the stairs. And it's not Saneya at first. It is Xander's dad.
What the hell is wrong with you? You won't come upstairs? What are you, ashamed of us? Your mother's crying her guts out.
You don't understand.
No. You don't understand. Here with us, and you're not gonna change that. You haven't got the heart.
He comes down the stairs, and this is like, I don't even remember. I was just watching another show where, like, there was this theme of, like, the father figure just always. Oh, I know what it was watching. Angel. It was a very similar thing that, like, Angel's dad, well, Liam's dad, which is, if you don't watch Angel's name before he was Angel, it was Liam. His dad was very disapproving, was always telling him he wasn't good enough, he wasn't whatever, and that's what caused Liam to be a little asshole. And so this just was like, I was like, oh, this is a very similar thing. Xander's dad doesn't approve of him, makes him feel like shit, makes him feel threatened, makes him feel scared, like makes him not feel comfort, right? Which is what you were talking about before, Jenny, that like truly at the heart of this for Xander, he's looking for comfort. And then his father changes to now be Saneya. And Saneya reaches into his chest, not that far away from how Buffy reached into Adam's chest, and pulls out Xander's heart.
Fascinating.
Interesting.
Let's just make a note of that. And let me also just say one more Joss thing from this dream. The way that he puts it, which I thought was really great and really worth bringing to the table here, is that Xander's fear, like we just saw Willow's fear, right? That everybody's going to find out the truth about her. Xander's fear is that he can't get out of the basement and that he can't stop being a Harris.
Oof.
I know.
I know. This series is a lot of things, but I think that one of the reasons that this episode is so respected is not only because of the brilliance in the writing, the brilliance in the camera work, the lighting, all the things that we've talked about so far, but also because it really puts the series on the map in a way that is different now. Like, it's like we're grown up, like, right? We're grown up,
right,
now.
Right.
We're in like a fucking poetry dream sequence where we are learning the inner workings of these characters in a way that is lyrical and nuanced and complicated. And, you know, it's just very exciting to know that we're getting this and we're going into season five, that we get to walk into season five, like armed with all of this complexity for these characters. So we have talked about Willow's dream. We have talked about Xander's dream. We've had some words with David Wells, who plays the Cheese Man. And we are going to do this finale in two pieces because it's just...
Oh, my God.
It's a big deal. So, Jenny, are you ready to say goodbye for this week? And let them all wait to hear what we have to say about Giles's dream. So coming at you is Giles's dream and Buffy's dream. We also have some more guest spots.
Wow.
In the second part of our season four finale.
Hell yeah. Okay, until the next part of this episode, to be continued. I am Jenny Owen Youngs and shall remain. You can...
I like that you said, until the next episode, I am Jenny Owen Youngs. That was you. Who's she going to tune in next week to find out?
Yes, I shall ever shall remain. When I'm not making this podcast, I make songs. You can hear some of them and learn more about me at JennyOwenYoungs.com. And you can give me a shout on Twitter anytime at Jenny Owen Youngs.
Yes, and until next episode, I am Kristen Russo. I do a lot of work with LGBTQ communities. You can check that out on my website, kristinnolene.com. I'm going to spell that for you. It's KristinNoeline, and you can use that handy-dandy spelling to also find me on Twitter and on Instagram. I would like to say that I am doing a second podcast now. It is about the L word. It is called To Ellen Back. I'm really excited about it. I think it's really fun. I also, Jenny... I'm horrified and thrilled to find out that people are watching the L Word for the first time because of me.
Oh, no.
I know. It's a lot of responsibility for these two shoulders to carry, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to manage
it. Good luck out there.
Thank you. So you can check that out. It's, you know, all the places that this podcast is. It is an Auto Straddle podcast that I'm doing with Reese Bernard, who's the CEO of Auto Straddle. It's super fun.
Buffering the Vampire Slayer is on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram at BufferingCast. And you can always email us at BufferingTheVampireSlayer@gmail.com.
Yes, you can support us by going on over to iTunes, rating and reviewing us. You can support us by listening to Angel on Top if you're not already, because what a delight. And you can also support us on Patreon. Go to BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. Click on Patreon. You can join us at one of many levels. And we have a rocking summer. New Year's rockin' summer.
What the hell?
On Patreon, we're doing a lot of things. Jenny's playing some concerts. I am doing a comic book club for the Boom Comics, the new Buffy Boom Comics. People are pretty stoked over in the Patreon space, so join our family if you will.
Please.
And of course, you can always buy new merch. We have... Oh my gosh, Jenny, we have like really amazing merch in the store.
What's
right
going
now
on over there?
Okay, so we have a new shirt from Christine Tuna, a reimagining of the logo. It's so beautiful.
It is, truly.
We also have a new pin designed by Kara Sykes that's on pre-order. Right now, it is Willow and Tara, bird's eye view, doing the O spell, as it is referred to.
Oh, it's the O spell, all right.
Uh-huh. It's the fucking coolest pin in the world. You can also pre-order a new mug with our logo on it, and fucking get this, Jenny, you can fucking pre-order a beer stein with Support Your Local Alewife on it. There's a ton of new shit in the store. We're really excited, so go on over there, check it out, BufferingTheVampireSlayer.com. Just click on shop.
And is that everything we need to say until part two of this episode?
Maybe we should let's both fall asleep
And then okay. And then in our dreams we'll howl out. Okay.
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 Till next time. Woo.
Do you think that was disappointing? Should we give them a real woo?
Till next time.
Yeah. Oh, hey there. We're about to roll on into what is not the song for Restless, which you'll get next week. But we are going to bring you, in case you missed it in the introduction, a poem written by Koya White Hat Artichoker. If you don't remember, Koya was the person that we interviewed for the episode Pangs. And what's very special is not only did we get that interview with Koya, but Koya is a poet and so wrote a poem specific to the episode Pangs, which we're going to play here for you. And also, which will be on the album that's released at the end of the season for season 4.
And if you want to support an organization that's important to Koya and important to us, you can check out Sistersong at sistersong.net.
Yes, and all that information, of course, will be in our show notes. Without further ado, here's Koya, and thank you, thank you, thank you, Koya, for this beautiful poem.
Pangs. Why are you here? I am vengeance. Spirits come back from the other side, having never gone home. Manifest, a people's rage, a genocide gone by, remains unnamed. We can only be vile ghosts of the past, but we know blood memory. We know you teach lies about our people. California Gold Coast costs Native lives. Asking us to feel sympathy for the infected boy man, a researcher down, for those who hold histories of destruction, California Mission's dark secret. Our ancestors still watch, still carry this pain. Us, our grandfathers come to protect, a cry for justice. Let it begin. We don't say Indian anymore, we say Native American, because y'all trying so hard. Pass the oregano, I don't want to hurt him. Yet y'all still act like Custer. Can you even see him? Beyond your beliefs of wild savages, people murdered, sacred objects housed in your anthropology departments? Same refrain. The only good Indian is a dead Indian. This week's big bad is America's original sin. Can we blame Buffy for not knowing what to do? This country has never settled this question. So why would Joss know better or Marty? When white folks interpret history based on what they haven't been told, we get the same result. Stoic, unspoken, silent native. Rage in a vacuum. Just get over it. The past is the past until it rises again. We know what you do to the land, you do to yourself. From Hidden Missions to Standing Rock to Washington, D.C., Sharice, Deb, and AOC honor the histories. They stand in the hallways of Congress, bold and unmuted, because our rage won't be held in mystery or the past. We survived. We are here. Don't fear vengeance. Fear everything you didn't learn. A planet on fire, this temporary reality, denial. We tried to tell you, live in balance with all life. Instead, we got missions, churches, mass graves, and walks of death. Huss is our ancestors' trauma come full circle. Why are you here? And how do we let you go? What brings peace to the restless? How do we heal? And how will we know?
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side passage?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridans, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.